It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Nepal in a state of mourning following Saturday's earthquake that killed thousands. As the earthquake death toll nears 5,000, Nepal is observing 3 days of national mourning for victims of Saturday's devastating 7.8 magnitude quake. Some 9,000 are injured, with casualties expected to rise. Dr. Richard Brennan of the World Health Organization is also concerned about the potential for widespread disease.
We're obviously concerned about the potential spread of infectious disease and are taking measures to address that. We have to make sure that women who continue to give birth have access to obstetric services, and we'll be looking at the other longer-term health issues such as psychosocial and impact on access to care for chronic medicines over time.
Former U.S. Ambassador to Kathmandu, James Moriarty, told VOA via Skype that developing a credible relief response is a race against time.
You've got people living, many of them living 3 to 4 days from the nearest road. They're racing against time. You've got 5 to 6 weeks before the monsoons start. And if you don't have reliable shelter and reliable food chains set up by then, Nepal's going to have a real mess on its hands.
Heavy rains are hampering aid trucks from reaching some of the worst affected areas. Helicopters have been unable to land, leaving many stranded and in need of aid. Health officials warned about the risk of disease with a shortage of clean water. Nigerian troops say they rescued hundreds of girls and women Tuesday in 3 camps in one of the last remaining strongholds of the militant insurgent group Boko Haram. It's not clear whether the 200 girls and nearly 100 women are those abducted from the Borno State village of Chibok more than a year ago, an act that drew international condemnation. This is VOA News. Indonesian media report that 7 foreigners and an Indonesian man convicted of drug trafficking have been executed over fierce protests from international rights groups and world leaders, including Australia's Prime Minister Tony Abbott.
These executions are both cruel and unnecessary. Cruel because both Andrew Chan and Myron Sukumaran spend some decade in jail before being executed. And unnecessary because both of these young Australians were fully rehabilitated while in prison.
The report said the 8 were put to death by a firing squad early Wednesday. The foreigners also include 4 from Africa and 1 from Brazil. There was no immediate official confirmation the executions had taken place. President Obama and Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe Tuesday pledged to complete a 12-nation Pacific Rim trade agreement known as the Trans-Pacific Partnership, even as the U.S. leader acknowledged there is opposition to it in both countries. Mr. Abe said significant progress in the trade talks had been made and expressed hope for an early and successful conclusion to those negotiations. The U.S. said Iranian naval ships and a patrol craft fired shots across the bridge of a Marshall Islands flagged cargo vessel in the Strait of Hormuz in Iranian territorial waters. A senior U.S. official said the container ship was transiting the strait into the Arabian Gulf on an internationally recognized maritime route at the time of the incident. Iran has yet to make an official comment. U.N. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is sending special envoy Saeed Jinnit to Burundi, where the president's decision to run for a third term has sparked violent street protests. The U.N. diplomat will hold consultations with President Pierre Nkurunziza and other officials. Opposition member and presidential candidate Agathon Rwasa hopes the protests will be short-lived and called on the president to reflect on how to defuse the situation.
There is no room for the violation of the Constitution and other regulations, because if we commit to build up Burundi on the principles of the state of law, we have first to respect the Constitution and other regulations.
At least 5 people have died so far this week in clashes between police and protesters. The election is scheduled June 26th. An unmanned supply ship supposed to be headed to the International Space Station is spinning out of control after taking off from the Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan. The U.S. Space Agency says flight controllers lost contact with the ship shortly after it separated from the Soyuz booster rocket. Police in the U.S. eastern city of Baltimore say all is quiet after Monday's riots. Following the death of a young black man in police custody, the city remains under a state of emergency with an overnight curfew. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, April 29th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigeria's military says its forces on Tuesday rescue about 300 women and girls from Boko Haram captivity.
The Sambisa Forest was stormed this afternoon in continuation of the operations to clear the place of terrorists. And so far, three camps of the terrorists were destroyed, and in the process, 200 girls and 93 women were rescued.
Major General Chris Olukolade is Director of Defense Information for Nigeria's military. His spokesman says the rescue of the girls is a reaffirmation of President Goodluck Jonathan's promise. And Southern African leaders meet today Wednesday in Zimbabwe in the wake of xenophobia in South Africa.
It is our firm belief that the efforts of the African Union to promote peace, stability, and democracy in every corner of the continent will, in the long run, reduce the need for people to migrate towards South Africa.
That's South African President Jacob Zuma speaking Tuesday in Harare, Zimbabwe. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry visits Africa next week. A U.S. diplomat calls on Burundi's president to respect the Arusha Accord, which calls for presidential two-term limit. And the U.N. says the Mediterranean migration is the worst humanitarian crisis since World War II. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Nigerian military said its forces rescued 200 girls and 93 women on Tuesday, but it was not immediately clear if some of the freed women are the schoolgirls abducted a year ago by Boko Haram militants. Spokesman Major General Chris Olukolade said the women are being screened to determine their true identity. He says the women were freed during raids on three Boko Haram camps in the Sambisa Forest in northern Nigeria. Olukolade said the operation, which is ongoing, involves ground troops and the Air Force.
In the operations that are ongoing to clear all forests and hideouts of terrorists, the Sambisa Forest was stormed this afternoon in continuation of the operations to clear the place of terrorists. And so far, three camps of the terrorists were destroyed, and in the process, 200 girls and 93 women were rescued.
Do you know, General, if these girls, if these women or these girls are these Chibok girls that everyone has been looking for?
I cannot say that for now, and that's the basis of the screening that is ongoing. The persons are being screened to determine their status, their background. It's only after that we can say where they come from, whether they are from Chibok or from anywhere.
General, you mentioned some operation in the Sambisa Forest. Is this the operation you have been talking about?
Yeah, it's continuing, like I said. The intention is to clear the forest of all terrorist bases. The place has been known as one of their havens, and this operation is targeted particularly on that forest. The troops are assaulting it from different directions. Air Force is involved, ground forces are involved, and the mission is continuing. What we have just reported is what was accomplished this afternoon. It has not ended because the forest is very vast and the combing is continuing.
General, what does this mean in terms of this whole operation against Boko Haram? What can you tell us? What does this development mean?
It means that their last stronghold has been invaded, and we want to be very careful to ensure that it's thoroughly combed and that they don't escape. Considering the vastness of that forest, the forest even dovetails into other countries. We want to ensure that there is no escape route for them. And it's going to be a very thorough operation. And the fact that these women and children were rescued is to show how discreet it has been to ensure that civilians are not harmed.
You mentioned the other day, you were trying to clarify to me about the operation against Boko Haram with Cameroon and Niger. So the Nigerian military carried out this operation?
Yes. The operation in Sambisa Forest at this moment is exclusively and completely Nigerian-driven, and it's been undertaken by the Nigerian armed forces.
How soon can the public know the true identity of these women or the girls?
As soon as the intelligence people screening them are through with it, we'll see the outcome.
General, we thank you very much for talking with us again. Look forward to talking with you again when you finally get the identity of the women. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Major General Chris Olukolade is the Director of Defense Information for Nigeria's military. He was speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. A spokesman for Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan says the rescue Tuesday of 200 girls and 93 women is a major breakthrough in the fight against terrorism. Ruben Abate says it also reaffirms President Jonathan's commitment to rescue the girls alive. He says the news is so big and good that it will gladden the hearts of all peace lovers around the globe.
Whatever their true identity may be, this is a major breakthrough in the fight against terror in the northeastern part of Nigeria. It's a major achievement for the security forces who have been making a lot of progress in the fight against terror. And for the Jonathan administration, it is also a great achievement and a clear reaffirmation, illustration, demonstration of President Jonathan's well-stated commitment to ensure that the people who have been captured by terrorists are freed and that they are freed alive. But we must keep our fingers crossed and wait until the true identity of the girls and the women is established. But whatever it is, they are human beings. This is news that should gladden the heart of every lover of human freedom in every part of the world.
So has President Jonathan been informed about this development?
Certainly, you can be sure that you will have been informed. I mean, this is the biggest news of the day in Nigeria. And, you know, there is joy, excitement all over the country that this has happened.
I know you mentioned this is a vindication, but did it come too little too late?
Well, I don't know what you mean by that. If what you mean is that this could have come before the elections, I think, well, I mean, the war against terror was a continuing operation. But I think that, you know, the good news is that persons in captivity have been rescued. And this has happened in the life of the Jonathan administration. President Jonathan is leaving office on May 29. And I think that personally, he too must be very happy, and he is, that, you know, lives have been saved. And that, you know, the operation in the Northeast has recorded this huge success. The identity of the girls, whether they are from Chibok or from wherever, the fact that these are human beings who have been rescued from the captivity of terrorists is very good news. That is more important to him than political ambition.
Rumi Abate is the spokesman for Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan. He was speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. A U.S. diplomat has called on Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza to respect the obligations spelled out in the Arusha Accord, which says that the president can serve no more than two terms. President Nkurunziza's decision to run for a third term has sparked 3 days of violent street protests. Assistant Secretary of State for Democracy, Human Rights and Labor, Tom Malinowski, said the consequences for Burundi will be terrible. But Secretary Malinowski, who leaves for Burundi this week, said there is still an opportunity for dialogue and compromise.
In the last decade or so, Burundi has made a great deal of progress in recovering from a terrible civil war, progress that was made possible by the Arusha Accord. And many of us in the U.S. government speaking out and working hard on the situation in Burundi right now because we fear that this progress is imperiled by President Nkurunziza's decision not to respect the principle of term limits in the Arusha Accords to try to hold on to power.
Assistant Secretary, despite the violence, the demonstrations that have been going on now for 3 days, today the advisor to the president said that the president would not back down on his decision. Is this something you're ready to take the president on?
Well, you know, we have seen this pattern in many other countries in Africa, in Burkina Faso most recently, when leaders in this situation decide to hold on past their time. They believe that they can do so, that their people are behind them, that they are secure, but it's, I think, an illusion of security. The president may have made a decision, but there are many, many other people in Burundi who have decisions to make. Other members of the government, the military, the police, the political parties, the youth, the people, the voters. And just because the president has decided not to respect the Arusha Accords doesn't mean that everybody else in Burundi has to follow him down that very dark and destructive path.
And this is happening at the same time when the government is intensifying media and civil society crackdown ahead of the elections. Demonstrations have been banned in the capital, Bujumbura. Security organs are using force against protesters. How worried are you, and what is the U.S. government doing to defuse this situation?
Well, first of all, we are very worried by the crackdown on nonviolent political speech and debate and also free media, the closing of the radio stations, for example, and arrests of protesters and civil society leaders. Actions that make it harder for people in Burundi to express themselves peacefully, to stand up for the rule of law in a peaceful way, are only going to make it more likely that some people choose to act outside the law and to use violence. And so our main concern is that the government, first of all, respect peaceful dissent and assembly and speech, that it maintain, that it preserve the avenues that the Burundian people have enjoyed to engage in peaceful speech and political activism, and that everybody on both sides avoid violence. Acts of violence, unlike political actions, are irreversible.
Tom Malinowski is the U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor. He was speaking with Edward Rema of U.S. Central Africa Division. Today is Wednesday, April 29th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 16 and a half minutes past the hour. Secretary of State John Kerry will visit Kenya and Djibouti next week from May 3rd to the 5th. A focus of his trip will be security and counterterrorism in the wake of al-Shabaab attacks, such as the recent deadly rampage at Kenya's Garissa University College. Another key topic will be expanding economic cooperation and civic engagement. VOA State Department correspondent Pam Dawkins has the story.
The United States is constantly reassessing its approach to helping other countries deal with threats from militant groups such as al-Shabaab, says Linda Thomas-Greenfield, the Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs. Thomas-Greenfield, who will be part of Kerry's delegation in Africa, says al-Shabaab is now more in a defensive mode rather than on the offense because of the success that African Union and U.S. forces have had in pushing back the militants in Somalia.
Their efforts in Kenya and in other countries outside of Somalia shows the desperation, and they are constantly looking for weak areas.
The United States has carried out drone strikes against al-Shabaab and provided support to African Union troops. Kerry's visit to Kenya will also lay the groundwork for President Barack Obama's July visit to Nairobi for a global entrepreneurial summit, a forum that connects businesses with international groups and governments. There are increased opportunities for U.S. companies in Kenya, says Thomas Greenfield.
Kenya's growth rate is extraordinarily high, and the entrepreneurial summit to take place in Kenya in July is recognition of the role that Kenya has played on the economic front on the continent.
In addition to being a military hub for the United States, Djibouti recently has been a stopover for third country nationals fleeing unrest in Yemen. The country is also a key shipping hub, says Atlantic Council Africa Center Director Peter Pham. But he adds Djibouti could benefit from U.S. help with democratization and better governance.
It is a stable country, but not necessarily one of the most democratic. And that lack of openness, the lack of transparency, leads one to wonder how long the stability can last.
The best thing the U.S. could do is help Djibouti deal with its economic development challenges, says Johnny Carson, who served as a top U.S. envoy to Africa.
Help in terms of finding ways to generate more employment for its youth, better educational and health outcomes for all of its citizens, and to effectively find ways to ensure that Djibouti is able to continue along the path of stability.
Before visiting Africa, Kerry stops in Sri Lanka on May 2nd to meet with government officials, civil society groups, and other representatives from the country's diverse communities. He will be the first Secretary of State to visit Sri Lanka since 2004. Pam Dawkins, VOA News, the State Department.
Heads of state from the Southern Africa Development Community, known as SADC, are in Zimbabwe for talks that followed the recent wave of xenophobic violence against foreign nationals in South Africa. Sebastian Mofu has more from Harare.
The issue of the immigrant attacks in South Africa is not on the official agenda for the meeting of leaders of the Southern African Development Community. But South African President Jacob Zuma has said he wants the issue discussed.
It is our firm belief that the efforts of the African Union to promote peace, stability, and democracy in every corner of the continent will, in the long run, reduce the need for people to migrate towards South Africa or towards the South. The promotion of intra-Africa trade, regional integration infrastructure, and other economic interventions is also designed to improve the economic situation in sister countries. The end result will be that brothers and sisters will eventually no longer need to leave their countries in search of a better life. We are preparing a formal report for SADC, African Union, and the United Nations on the matter.
Mr. Zuma, who made the comments during his country's recent Freedom Day commemorations, who joined about 10 SADC leaders Wednesday in Harare. They are scheduled to discuss how the SADC region can industrialize so the subcontinent can prosper. Already, Malawian leader Peter Mutharika has indicated he wants the SADC to address the issue of xenophobia. The outgoing government of Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan has recalled the acting Nigerian High Commissioner to South Africa to protest how Pretoria handled the attacks that claimed 7 lives. The African Union has said it welcomes efforts by South Africa to curb the violence, but more must be done to protect African and other foreign migrants. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
More migrants have been brought ashore in southern Italy after the visit Monday by UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon to an Italian warship patrolling the coastline. He said recent migrant deaths had made the Mediterranean a sea of misery and called it the worst humanitarian crisis since the Second World War. Henry Richwell reports from Augusta on the Italian island of Sicily.
The sleek lines of the Italian warship slowly pull into harbour in the Sicilian town of Augusta. Packed on the rear deck, surrounded by armed crew wearing white protective coats and masks, sit more than 300 migrants, another desperate human cargo arriving on the shores of southern Italy. Among them were Somalis, Nigerians and Eritreans. Many were barely able to walk after days at sea. Some appeared severely malnourished. Several were taken to the hospital or given immediate treatment. Aid worker Gemma Parkin of the group Save the Children was at the dockside.
People have told them they were held for 5 days by the smugglers in Libya in a house under armed guards. Now, people weren't given any food whatsoever. They were given some water, but subsequently, because of the terrible conditions that people are being kept in, 3 children have died.
Parkin says the conditions forced upon the migrants by smugglers in Libya are frequently barbaric. The migrants arrived just a day before UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon was flown by helicopter to an Italian warship patrolling off the coast of Sicily. He described the humanitarian crisis as the worst since the Second World War. His host, Italian Prime Minister Matteo Renzi, said Mr. Ban's presence was crucial. Italy on its own cannot do this, he said. For this reason, we needed the support of the UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon to see with his own eyes the extraordinary force that Italy is pursuing to welcome these migrants alone. EU Foreign Affairs Chief Federica Mogherini also visited the patrol ship.
We need to have multiple answers to all the different aspects of the phenomenon.
We need multiple answers to hold different aspects of the phenomenon, saving lives, fighting the traffickers. For this, we need global partnerships. Italy may struggle to persuade other countries to share the burden, says policy analyst Riccardo Fabiani of the Eurasia Group.
The European partners are also quite, I would say, reluctant to get involved in this situation. And Italy feels that it's been left alone, basically, by its partners facing a crisis that has no short-term or easy fix.
Since the beginning of the year, 25,000 migrants have landed in Italy. Europe must deal with the twin crises of stopping the deaths at sea and coping with the huge numbers arriving almost every day. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, Augusta, Italy.
It is 25 minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. African champions Madagascar are drawn in Group D with Russia, Paraguay and Tahiti in the preliminaries at the FIFA Beach Soccer World Cup in Portugal in July. According to the draws conducted in Espinho, Portugal on Tuesday, Senegal are in Group A where they face Argentina, Portugal and Japan. The 10-day contest starts on the 9th of July. Turning to athletics, South African sprinter Justin Palfreman clocked two lifetime bests of 51.78 seconds in 400 meters, then 22.96 seconds in 200 meters at the University Sports South Africa Athletics Championships in Stellenbosch over the weekend. She qualified for the two events for both the World Student Games in South Korea and the World Athletics Championships in China later this year. Palfreman is particularly happy she dipped below 23 seconds in 200 meters.
I'm so happy. Everything's working now. I've been wanting the 22 so badly, and it's finally come. Can't be happier.
Yes. How many years has it taken? Because until now, it was 23.08, and you were battling. How many years is it you've been trying to break that?
Well, I think last year I'm 23.02, and it came clear to me that I can actually break 23. So since last year, but now that I've got it, I can't believe it.
Now, you've made a personal best in the 400 meters several qualifying rounds, and then of course again after several qualifying rounds your personal best. Did you feel the strain of having to run so many preliminary rounds before making your personal best in 200 meters in the final?
Yes, well, I felt that I was tired in that last straight, but I really wanted the time. I really wanted to qualify, so I pushed through it. I mean, obviously I was tired, but I think getting what I wanted makes it all worth it.
Apart from the World Student Games, the big one is the World Championships, and I think that's at the back of your mind. Going forward, in light of what you've done so far, what are your thoughts?
I'm excited. Well, for World Students, I really would like to make a final. I think I have it in me. I'm going to do my best, and whatever comes from it will come. For the World Seniors, I think it's more about experience at the moment. No matter how far I make it, I was there, and I will enjoy myself and enjoy the experience. Thank you so much.
That was Justin Palfreman, South Africa's 400-meter and 200-meter champion, speaking in Stellenbosch, South Africa. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Cape Town, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Nigerian troops rescued 200 girls and 93 women on Tuesday, but it is not clear if any of those freed are the schoolgirls kidnapped a year ago. Nigerian Defense Department spokesman Major General Chris Olukolade told viewers Chris Stein the abductees were found at three camps in a stronghold of the Boko Haram extremist group. Olukolade said the area is one of the last remaining Boko Haram havens after the military earlier this year chased the Islamist group out of towns and villages that it had captured. He said the camps have since been destroyed by the military. That's it for this Wednesday, April 29th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post-editor Mark O'Woman, along with our engineer Jamie Cook, I am James Butte in Washington, wishing everyone in Africa a very good Wednesday.
Everyone is looking for something special when maybe they should just listen instead. The VOA's African Music Mix will soothe your nerves and calm your head. Tune in from 0 to 300 UTC and 1100 to 1300 hours UTC to make you feel good. So treat yourself to that something special.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, from recent xenophobia attacks of foreign nationals in South Africa, 200 feared dead after a migrant boat sinks off the Libyan coast. We'll take a look at the plight of immigration on the continent and the challenges African immigrants face as they seek a new opportunity in a new land. That's next time, Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on VOA Africa.